Hello, and welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I'm Janice Cunning, and I'm here with my colleague, Michelle Malloy-Dillon, and we're excited to welcome our friend, Paul Nazareth, to the podcast. Paul is the VP of Education and Development at the Canadian Association of Gift Planners, and probably more applicable right now to our conversation, also has a personal life mission to have a positive impact on a million careers. So welcome, Paul.
Thanks for having me. So glad to be back.
Yeah, so Paul, you wrote a wonderful blog post for us this week about what is a personal board of directors. So what is a personal board of directors?
You know, I came across this a number of years ago, and again, very specifically for fundraisers. I've been honored to be on the advisory board of the Humber College Postgraduate Fundraising Program. And one of the instructors, Natalie Murin, who talks about emotional intelligence, career development, brought this up. And there is a lot of literature out there on it, per se, still theoretical, not deep knowledge. And so we started talking about it in the context of a fundraising career. And that many people talk about having just one mentor, when in fact, when I observe, and again, most of what I put out there is what I've observed in successful professionals. And when I started to dig, I found that many successful professionals have a variety of mentors. And I really like the concept of formalizing it in the theory of what we all know, a board.
Yeah. And it is like such a cool idea, because I think it's true. Like sometimes one of the things you talk about is like, we sort of sometimes think like, oh, it has to be someone older or more experienced than us, you know, but this idea of like having multiple people, it's kind of like friends, right? You always think about like, there's your friends that like maybe like to go to the movies with you, and then your friends that like to like go to the gym with you, and you know, people play different roles in your life. But I'm curious for you, like, first of all, how long have you had like been sort of doing this yourself?
It's been about a little under 15 years now.
Okay, wow.
Came into the concept, and part of it was a little over 10 years ago was when I hit the biggest block in my career. When I was following the linear path as a fundraiser, a development officer, manager, director, and going down the assembly line. And I just had a huge break and said, this is, you know, it's not about, in fact, it was that I was disillusioned with the assembly line. I didn't want to go, as they always say, you know, be careful what climbing the ladder, because what wall it's on. I looked up and I saw where the ladder was leaning on that wall and said, this is not a journey I want to be on. And so I kind of dislodged myself from the path. And when I said, okay, now I'm floating in space, I need to create some boundaries. I need to create some goals on where to go. And again, we just see this weird, wizened old, you know, mentor, when in fact, I needed all the other members of that good structure of the board. I needed to flip the board at the time. The board needs to change. I'm no longer an organization that does X. Now I need people that do Y. So that's when I started to build it out and say, I need, you know, skill sets and things like that. And then, heck, life became more exciting.
Yeah. So tell us, like, in your own journey, and then we'll talk about what you've seen with other people, because I know you're a master of having career conversations. But for you, like, what were those categories? Who were those people? And what was the impact on your career?
So, you know, the single largest growth, the growth was releasing myself from the linear, from the boxed in, again, like any profession. So many people box themselves into their profession. And in this new millennium, every profession is adjacent to economic factors, to technology factors. We now know that in the world of management, emotional intelligence and emotional resilience is as hard a skill as you're ever going to need. And that's what this whole crisis has proven. And so once I released myself from linear skills, you know, on a performance development piece, then things got more exciting. And by that specifically, I mean, I opened myself up to the rest of business. When I travel the country, again, I'm born and raised in Toronto, but my work has me crossing the country 40 times a year. And when I visit communities that are more closely connected, I watched my fundraising colleagues find great joy in being in the economic bloodstream. Talking to everybody from the mayor to the head of the Chamber of Commerce to the head of local unions, sports clubs, opening myself up and having more people on that board truly brought great dimensions to my life. And I've watched it do it for many others.
Yeah, and you took such personal responsibility for that. And you talk about that a little bit in your blog post too. This is a way that we can take personal responsibility for our professional development and for our own support. And I love the breadth at which you looked for that support.
It pains me sometimes that people need to perceive a threat in order to take personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I've observed that. So I like to give them threats. And I remind them that if you don't choose, the choice will be made for you. You've probably heard before that we are always becoming the five people we hang out the most. Mm-hmm. You better make sure it's five positive people, because in fact, most people, and their spouses can attest to this, spend all their time complaining about their coworkers and bosses. So then, sorry, it's time to start curating. And once I started, and this was 10 years ago, curating. Again, I don't enter into a relationship, a working relationship with anybody I haven't really vetted over the course of years. You know, just before this, I got off my regular check-in with my CEO, who I've known, I observed their work, I really subscribe to their values and their strategy. And now my relationship with my supervisor, with my own leader, is one of the most positive in my career and life, and has been one of the strengths in my resilience, because I really have gone deep with this individual to understand, and we explicitly outline so that by the time we were entering into an employment relationship, which is often a fast moving thing and you don't have time to have these discussions, we've had them before. And so if you don't, it will be chosen for you. You are always becoming the people you're around. And if you don't like those people, then you better work on this.
Yeah. I mean, I've said this to you many times, but I really feel like you, Paul, are like the person I know in my life who is the most intentional about your career. You know, you're always like many steps ahead and thinking about it. And like you said, it's like, you know, when you're interviewing for a job, it's like, you know, that organization inside and out, you know, that leader inside and out, you know, that's a place that you want to be. And, you know, you do your personal retreats every year. Like, you're just so, it's so inspiring to me how much focus and attention you put on this idea of career planning.
Thank you. Well, again, as human beings, we unfortunately don't learn from the hunky dory. As the bare naked ladies say, I'm like a baby, she's like a cat. When we are happy, we both get fat. And we learn from pain. And for the first 10 years of my 21-year career, we all make all the mistakes we can. And I really learned and had some really unfortunate leader relationships. And again, now later in life, I've looked back and taken personal responsibility to say, what part did I play in that negativity? And now, you know, I've also learned to forgive a lot more, to say, where was that person in their career? And so now it's saying, okay, if I want these things, I've got to be more intentional. And again, I've observed great people do it and learn from them.
So how do you go out and find your personal board of directors, Paul? What kind of steps do you take?
So, you know, like, again, this was so wonderful that we've got quite a defined process in choosing a board. You know, it's go look at that process. So many organizations have it down on paper, and that we think of that trivial pursuit piece with the little pieces in it. Well, what are the skill sets we need for the board? I need someone to guide me in leadership, management, finance, personal resilience. A lot of CEOs and executive directors talk to me about the loneliness of leadership. And for the ones who have created a board that includes a very small circle of other leaders, and in fact, now I've seen more managers, more mid-level people doing this. There is an incredible catharsis. And in this pandemic, to have a circle of people who aren't even looking to give you solutions, but are just there to listen and hear you and understand your situation, because they're living it too. So again, I often describe it as the leadership level, the peer level, and I've focused more and more over the past couple of years over that youth and emerging leader level, that you need someone to inspire you, heck, even scare you for, because they're so awesome. If you stay still, they're going to eat that sandwich from out of your lunchbox.
Yeah. And, you know, I loved how you said in the post, and everybody has to go read the post, it's so good, is like, don't be like, the cliche is like, I need someone younger because I need to learn social media or technology. It's like, okay, like, I think you're like, get your tech department to teach you that, right? But it is that, is, I find that too. And you know what, one thing I love, like, you know, for those who don't know, Paul is also in Toronto where I live, and Paul has had some amazing used to be in person. We'll get back to those, you know, networking events over the years that I've been thrilled to attend. And that's what I love, especially because you're connected to so many of the colleges that teach fundraising. It's like there's all these young people and I'm like always blown away. Like they've got their business cards, even though they're job hunting, like they got their spiel down, like they know exactly what they're looking for. They're so polished. And I'm like, wow, where did they come from? And I guarantee I was not like that in my 20s, you know.
And we're so lucky to have leaders in these programs, people like Ken Wyman in the Humber program and over at Carleton, Susan Phillips and the team at the Masters of Nonprofit Leadership. You know, truly now emotional intelligence has become recognized as a skill, and personal branding is something that's required because you will have to figure out profile. And wonderfully enough, in the new millennium, anybody can and should have the profile they want. You don't need to be, as Robin Sharman says, you don't need to be a quote-unquote leader to have a title. And as Dory Clark says, in our new world of gig economy, or as I like, portfolio careers, that you need to claim your own space. And as we talk about diversity and gender leadership, claiming space, owning your own space is going to be a whole new area that we have to help people to learn how to flex that muscle.
Yeah, yeah. Is there any sort of younger fundraisers, you can name names if you want to, or just kind of generally, like, what is it that you get from them and learn from them?
Yeah. And again, I was just mentioned, we're going to stop talking about our kids as inspiration. No, we're talking about skilled professionals over the years. And you also know that I have created my own gratitude award called the Golden Crabs, of which Janice is one of the early holders. I call people out and I want to do so. So over the years, I've called out people like Brock Warner and Shannon McInnes and Krista Stewart at Canada Helps, of young people who are skill developed, who have invested in coaching, education. You know, where did I get my personal retreat and other things from? It was these young professionals, a lot of times, who are creating new ways. Whereas a lot of my more established professionals are the people from whom I learn the established and important, sometimes secret paths. You know, I didn't know about CEO networking groups and all these private leadership courses and coaching. So there's so much we can learn from all of these different groups. Absolutely.
What I love about this idea of finding a board of directors that is of many different experiences, ages, you know, levels of all sorts of kinds, is that it gives us a freedom to really reach out with an open heart, with people that are resonating with us, with people that inspire us, with people that kick us in the butt, with people that really challenge us. You know, it just, it expands this possibility, rather than trying to find like the perfect mentor who's older and more experienced than I am.
Yeah.
It can be such a breadth. It's a team.
That's it. And that's what people often describe it as too, to say, I feel more confident, comfortable to know that I've got a team that, you know, they say it takes a village. That's pretty random. I'm talking about a team and you're the captain. And, you know, when people say, I share with people to say, you're the CEO of Me Inc. For me, that's what my retreat is all about. I go to that retreat and it's the one place in the world where I'm number one, where I matter. You know, I have this, I can stop being, you know, all of this constantly with the, you know, saying about how things are done, et cetera, and to say, where am I? Where do I need to be going? And how do I take responsibility for the people I'm serving? Right. I now have a set number of goals per year to nominate people for awards. And I'm aggressive. And they find it really weird when I reach out and say, hey, like, you're on a list of people I have to nominate this year because you are the best of us. And so I'm just asking for you, when you see something and ever think, why not me? Or what about me? Please just shoot that so I can nominate you. I'm asking you. And yeah, they often are like, this is weird. Is this not weird? And I said, you know, for a lot of other people who have more formal spaces can buy their way into other things. It is. So we got to get aggressive about that. And in 2021, when people, everybody's thinking about diversity, how do you untokenize that? Mm-hmm. Is to actually quietly have these people on your board as well, who can kick your butt and speak to you honestly, not, you know, tacitly, passively call you out, say, hey, that wasn't cool, we don't say that anymore, et cetera.
Right. Yeah.
Open conversations, quiet conversations.
Yeah. And I love, you know, as you were saying that one of the books you mentioned, and I know you love reading, and you know we love reading too here at Fundraising Leadership, is Give and Take, Adam Grant. And I think that's what I so love and admire about you and why your events are so positive, that it's like, you know, you're giving so much. You are a person who gives so much. Like Paul is always like meeting people for coffee and going for walks and, you know, really helping people. But I know that feeds your soul so much.
But also to be clear, and I always raise this whenever I can, it is not generosity. It is reciprocity. You know, we'll often make it easier for people when I explain them, look, this is how the mafia works. You know, you help me and one day there will be a call. and I tell them that I'll call you, but what I'll ask you to do is I will ask you to help someone who is like you today. I can't, you know, what value do I have to women leaders? You know, I connect them with women leaders. And who have gone through exactly what they've gone through in their situation, language, diversity, geography. Geography really matters, right? So yes, absolutely. Adam Grant, my second favorite networking book of all time, greatest at being explicit about reciprocity. Single greatest networking book of all time, though, continues to be Work the Pond by our colleagues Gail Hadron-Rezac and Darcy Rezac and Judy Thompson. Because for me, again, it's Canadian. And context does matter for us. On those cultural sides, again, on the business side, I'm not looking for community networking. I am a machine that exists to do business development. I'm very honest about that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking for people that can help us talk about how to build those relationships. And again, organically, don't reach out when you need help. And that's what Adam Grant's talking about, from high school, grade school, all the way to your networking association. You've got those contacts, let them organically grow before you need to negotiate.
Yeah. And let's talk about the worthy opponent a little bit, because I think that's another fun category for your board of directors that people might not think about.
Or as I like to say, nemesis. It's so much more dramatic, and people really identify with that. It was better articulated, because I said nemesis because I talk about running mate. A favorite movie of mine is The Count of Monte Cristo, the more modern version with James Caviezel and Guy from Memento. And in that movie, there's a relationship between these two very ambitious young leaders where they have a chess piece that when one of them is further ahead than the other one in their career, they physically give it to each other. Mm. And I love that concept of Simon Sinek. And actually he says in the book, it's Adam Grant was his nemesis.
Yeah.
Getting the talks and the book deals and all that, and to reach out and say, you know, runners run faster when they have someone to run with. So let's run together, right? In Canada, if you remember that beautiful picture of Usain Bolt and Andre deGrasse Tyson moving at the speed of sound, but connecting with each other.
Yeah.
Having that in your career, and now that I do, and have created it for others, they just talk about the joy. But also a little bit of the deliciousness. You
know, having someone your fight. Game on.
It is so much fun. Yeah.
Especially the way you say it. Say nemesis again.
Nemesis. Again, I got that. I'll tell you the story where it comes from, funny enough, is that I'm a weirdo. I only buy clothes once a year, and I only buy jeans once every 10 years because I'm weird. And I was going for my 10-year purchase of these jeans at the Levi's factory and really struggling with the new world of tight pants for men, and it was really uncomfortable. And the young person who was helping me, I was like, you've done so much here. Thank you. She goes, I could see this is a struggle for you. I said, I want to tell your supervisor how much help you've been. What's your name? And she said, my name, sir, is Nemesis. And it said that on the receipt. That was her name. I was like, you have the greatest name of all time. And in talking with that with peers, again, I see the visceral reaction people have rather than worthy opponent, running mate. When I say Nemesis, everybody knows who I'm talking about in their life. They know who they're looking at. I'm like, they got that thing. Well, let's make that healthy.
Yeah.
And again, making it healthy and helping people to reach out and have these conversations has increased the satisfaction, the fulfillment in so many people's lives. And I just love it.
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, we always like to give people something to try on our podcast, Paul. And so what do you want to give our listeners a chance to try in their lives?
It is that intentionality. You know, again, we all talk quite a bit about the power of journaling. And my personal retreat that I go on every year is about getting to a private place somewhere away from my home that's quiet for me, preferably in nature, whiteboard and a journal. And when it comes to the personal board of directors, it's time to map it out. So say who's on there now, what are the skills I'm looking to have, who are my dream people for this? Because again, in a small world, and it is small now because of digital technology, it is very surprising who you can get contact with short term and even long term. Granted, Elon Musk and Bill Gates and all those people are typical, just as we as fundraisers say, that's not who to call for dollars. It's not who to call for mentorship. It's time to, and again, what a lot of people have told me is, I've gotten my best mentors by asking my current mentors who should be the next step for me. Who should I aspire to speaking to, and who do you find energy from? And people come out of the woodwork who you never, you know, imagined. I was in a discussion with my colleagues at the Association of Fundraising Professionals in Newfoundland, and a young person spoke up about her CEO on the other side of the country, how inspiring, how much she invests in young professionals, how much she clearly cares about leadership. And then I found out that this CEO teaches nonprofit leadership here at my own alma mater, didn't even know. So asking the questions of people, starting to do the exploration, make the moves, get it on paper, set a timeline to have it done before, you know, first quarter of the year to start reaching out. And again, as I said in the blog post, don't worry, this is organic. You're not sending someone an agreement to be my mentor.
Yeah,
it's just saying, I will do the work to contact you two or three times a year, max.
Yeah.
Good conversations. That's the most powerful thing. When we do it intentionally, it gets power.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the idea of, you know, like you said, at different stages, you need to refresh. Like every 10 years, you need those new genes, you know, when you reach a new stage in your career.
That's right.
You got to get new mentors.
And sometimes you need a good salesperson to help you find that pair of jeans that fits. You don't have to find them all by yourself.
I must say my husband, who's from Britain, he loves the skinny pants, and he was wearing them before they were fashionable here. So every time we're in Europe, that's like our goal, is like we have to go shopping for pants, because he's like, all the pants in North America are too baggy.
Well, and let me again put it out there. And again, this is all about bespoke. This is all about who you are and being honest about it and being comfortable in your skin. And I'll share with the listeners, I'm a big boy, you know, and I've lost some weight in the past number of years being intentional about my health, but I'm always going to be a big guy. And fashion was supposed to never be for us. Mm-hmm. And so that's the part in which we have to reach out and say, and in my particular case, I found a place where they have those kind of things for, you know, people who fit my profile, et cetera, for everything. And that's partly why I only once go shopping once a year, partly because I hate clothes shopping. So I pack it all into one day. I bring a bunch of big boys. We pile into a minivan. We go to this place. We go for steaks in the morning and we shop for business clothes in the afternoon. Once a year done.
It's so fun. I'm shocked that you don't like shopping, because you are like the most fashionable man that I know.
It is a utilitarian tool and I despise it. I'm wearing track pants right now, and I've been wearing pants for only 2% of the entire pandemic. I will share with people that's my challenge, actually, is Paul Nazareth. I have raw, vicious code switching, and I'm, you know, getting more confident talking about it now. I have no in between. It is only shorts and t-shirts or pocket squares and all of that. And again, it's utilitarian. So people will never have to think, oh, he is just this way. It's very intentional. It's not organic. I do it with intentionally for the branding. And again, being honest with yourself to say, this is who I am, and I'm comfortable with that. So now that I am, it is a wonderful new world. And to have, you know, great style inspiration, David Brown over at Georgian, Clay Buck in the States. There's a bunch of guys who we enjoy that together.
Yeah.
Nice.
So before we wrap up, Paul, I know that people are going to want to follow you and reach out to you. So tell people what's the best way to get in touch with you.
Indeed. I always say my actual place of residence is LinkedIn, because in my job, I am crossing the country and traveling quite a bit. So never in one place. And you know what I love to do is be, and I can't wait in the after when it comes to get back to the conference world. And I quietly do net walks every, so if you ever hear them coming to town, reach out. I'm always walking with people before the conference starts, but LinkedIn's the easiest way to reach me. Twitter is where I kind of emotionally live. Instagram, experimenting with TikTok, and all that kind of stuff. But LinkedIn's probably the best place.
Yeah, and we've got your LinkedIn, your Twitter, and your Instagram linked in the blog post. People can click on that.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you so much for having me and for all you do for our community. Again, Janice, I shared how angry I was at one of my colleagues when I found out that they were secretly getting coaching from me, why this 20-year-old was moving so fast in their career. But that's partly how millennials and young professionals have really inspired me to show me how they invest. They don't wait for the world. They don't wait for their boss to do it for them. It is an incredible, wonderful generation. And I encourage more people to take on formal coaching. And in my work in Connect Working, which is the speaking I do now to business schools and even fundraising teams to talk about personal branding and networking, it's for me, it's about those advancement pieces, but coaching is an investment. And so I thank you for the investment you make in so many people and in my CAGP community as well.
Well, thank you. I know, I've told you this one-to-one, but I'm happy to tell everybody here. I mean, you have been one of the most key supporters really from the beginning of my coaching career. You've been there for me. You've invited me to events. You've asked me to speak. You've connected me with people. And, you know, we've had so many wonderful talks and inspiration. And so, yeah, it really, I would not be where I was today if it was not for you.
You are very welcome.
So this podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you're enjoying the show, please rate and review it so others can find us. We're sharing a free resource this week on the fundraisingleadership.org website. We have a free ebook called Being a Nonprofit Leader, a Guide for Board Members. Please feel free to go to our website and download that now as a wonderful resource for your team. Now go put it into practice. Yeah.